Will your TV be playing in the year 2000? Will your washing machine still be washing in the next century? And what about your vacuum cleaner? I'm Charlie McKee, chairman of Electrolux. Laboratory tests show our Electrolux Olympia 1 will clean for the equivalent of 20 years in normal use with routine Electrolux maintenance. 20 years, and 20 years from now will be the year 2000.
The Olympia 1. Expect a lot. It's an Electrolux.
That commercial from 1980 says more about the world in 2022 than the writers could have ever imagined. And it may say even more about where we're headed as a species. Far-fetched? Hell no. Come on, hang with me for a while.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
So what did that commercial about a vacuum cleaner have to do with this episode? Well, I'll get to that in a little bit. But when we were furnishing the house, my wife and I found this kick-ass brake front about 100 miles from L.A. It's beautiful, solid wood with some amazing carving and scroll work on it. Original brass hardware tarnished by decades of existence. Had it been in some trendy antique store around Beverly Hills, it might have easily fetched several grand. But the price in a little town in the middle of nowhere was $400. I paid them half and came back a week later with the other 200 and a friend's truck. I knew the thing was old, but I didn't know how old. All I know about antiques is what I learned on the Antique Roadshow, and that was to keep an eye out for hand-carved rhino horns. A pair of those things turned out to be worth $1.6 million. Maybe the brake front would also be one of those lucky finds. You know, when some dusty old chair from Uncle Louie's attic turns out to be a Chippendale worth $250,000. When we got it home, I started pulling the drawers out to see if there were any gold doubloons or Fabergé eggs forgotten in the corners. There weren't. But hidden on the side panel of one drawer was an inscription. John Smythe, cabinet maker, Indianapolis, 1911. Imagine that. Well over a century old, built by hand and signed by the craftsman. That ain't some particle board shit from IKEA, no siree, Bob. Somehow it had found its way a couple thousand miles west from the heartland, to a musty antique store in a place named Yucaipa, California, then to my home in the suburban sprawl of the San Fernando Valley. How many stops had that brake front made before it arrived at my house? How many Thanksgiving turkey platters sat on that beautiful wood? How many different sets of china were tucked behind its fancy carved doors? How many brides fixed their hair one last time in the beveled glass mirror before they dashed out the door to the church and a new life? How did those marriages work out? Were there any great-grandchildren still extant from the time of the brake front's creation? Who were they? Where were they? Odds are that piece of furniture had endless stories to tell, like some foster child moved from home to home, always there to help celebrate a birth or graduation. Probably mourn at a few wakes, too. Besides the loving handiwork of John Smythe, it has a provenance of its own, and unlike most of the disposable shit made today, every molecule of it is from Mother Earth. From what forest came its wood? What beach had the sand that became the mirror? Where was the ore from that was forged into the screws and hinges and drawer pulls? There was no lifetime guarantee written by John Smythe's signature, but his work has outlasted several lives. The flat serving surface might have held a Philco radio that announced the bombing of Pearl Harbor, or a Zenith portable TV showing the moon landing to a wide-eyed family. It stood by as the world went from horses and buggies to automobiles and airplanes, from telegraphs to telephones to atomic bombs and digital everything. All those inventions were considered high-tech at the time of their introduction. As Grandma or Grandpa sat in the rocker and said, "What do they think of next?" And all that high-tech shit soon became obsolete and then landfill. Yet there remains the handmade creation of one man, one man's imagination and design and skill. It looks about as good as the day he stained the wood, and it hasn't lost a scintilla of functionality. My daughters are a ways off from becoming brides, but they're always checking their hair in that mirror. A mirror that is still flawless. No gray mottling from cracked or peeled silvering, as appears on cheap shit mirrors 1/10 its age. In the years we've had it, it's served up Thanksgiving and Christmas feasts. Sometimes just the four of us, sometimes a dozen or more guests. Of course, it's only a thing, an inanimate object, but it is woven into the tapestry of our family, as it was for who knows how many previous ones. There's a branch of hocus-pocus occultism called psychometry. The idea is that somehow objects, clothing, jewelry, furniture becomes imbued with the energy of its owner. Psychics claim they can hold somebody's wristwatch and tell you all about them. Well, that's no less plausible than tarot cards or the I Ching. But now we live in a disposable age where virtually nothing is built to last. Most things are designed to fail, fall apart, especially high-tech crap. I was digging through my desk drawer recently and discovered a BlackBerry Curve. It was the latest and greatest when I got it. Now its only use might be as a paperweight. But who has paper anymore? The trendy slogan among commie douchebags is,
"You'll own nothing and be happy."
The logical reply to that statement is, if that's true, then you don't own yourself. So let's put a bullet in your head. You'll be happier. Everything is temporary and disposable and designed to be that way, which is hypocritical in a world where the same fuckballs who want us to own nothing and be happy and consume disposable crap, well, they're also screaming about
sustainability.
All those highly credentialed morons at Davos and Bilderberg or the WEF, self-appointed masters of the universe, who really don't know shit about anything. The conceit of those clowns is breathtaking. As they build their empires, they're oblivious to the widening stress cracks in their faulty foundations. What do I mean? Well, Jeff Bezos appears to be a pretty smart guy. But I'll bet $100 against one of his billions. He has no idea who the fuck Percy Bysshe Shelley was, nor has he ever heard of his immortal sonnet, Ozymandias. It's only 14 lines, but it's a vivid cautionary tale, an inescapable prediction for every would-be master of the universe. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tells that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear: My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare. The lone and level sands stretch far away." Some Eastern religions believe that the world has been built and destroyed several times, And that theory seems more believable when you shrink the interval from eons to the relative blip in time since the creation of my 1911 breakfront. Bezos is not the first Bezos. Every step he takes is in the footprints of two earlier masters of the "we'll sell you anything in the fucking universe," Richard Sears and Alva Roebuck. Their business predated Amazon by just a teensy little century. Their catalog was in every American home. They pretty much invented mail order, and they stocked everything from hubcaps to houses. Yeah, you could buy a house from Sears, and they sold over 75,000 of them, from dinky bungalows for $500 to the palatial Magnolia model. It had 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, full dining and living room, den, parlor, kitchen, pantry, sunroom, 2 decks, sleeping room, walk-in closet, balcony, 10-foot ceilings, full basement, ready to assemble and delivered to you via freight car for a very reasonable $6,488. You could assemble it yourself, or for a few extra bucks, they'd send you a crew to put it together. It looked like a fucking mansion. Gorgeous. Sears sold 370 different styles of prefab homes, and about 11,000 of them are still standing. Clearly, they were exponentially better quality than most of the shit they're building today. Cookie-cutter crap that developers have the balls to label custom homes. The Sears catalog business was strongest in rural areas. I never saw one until I visited my Uncle John's house way up in the Catskill Mountains. Country people depended on Sears for stuff they couldn't get without traveling great distance to a city. The catalog was enormous, at least 600-700 pages, a doorstopper. The cover was in color, but the pages were black and white and super thin. In some frugal homes, the moment the new catalog arrived, they'd start using pages of the old one for toilet paper. I was astonished by what it held. Along with all the boring household goods, they sold hunting rifles and duck calls and camo outfits and deep-sea rods and reels and John boats and outboard motors and turkey smokers and replica frontier fortresses and Daisy air rifles and slingshots and all this fantastic country living stuff that nobody had in fucking Queens, New York. It was a wonderland of rustic delights. And some of those ladies' lingerie ads were pretty eye-catching, too. Damn near everything was built to last. Anything without at least a 10-year warranty was considered junk. Plenty of items were sold with a lifetime guarantee. There's something both terrifying and comforting about owning something the manufacturer claims will outlast you. And after you croak, then what? How many lifetimes? Did your heirs rest easy knowing the Craftsman torque wrench would be replaced if they wrecked it on a Buick's lug nuts? Maybe that's why Sears Roebuck, once a mighty Dow component, is now perched at the precipice of extinction. In its day, it was considered too big to fail. Its stock was a widow and orphan's investment that never tanked and always threw off a nice dividend. It's difficult to identify the plot points of its downfall. They built the tallest building in the world in Chicago. They changed with the times and seemed to do everything right. When shopping malls began to kill Main Street, a massive Sears was often the anchor store at the mall. They diversified. They owned Allstate Insurance and Dean Witter Financial and Coldwell Banker Real Estate. They were even one of the first to get online when most people had not even heard of the internet. Prodigy was a Sears business. Jeff Bezos might think he's king shit, but he would do well to read Shelley's sonnet because at some point down the road, Amazon will be Sears. Sears mail order killed the general store on Main Street. Shopping malls killed Main Street. Amazon killed malls. Something will kill Amazon. Maybe Alibaba. Nobody knows just yet. You have to wonder if the concept of antiques will also become obsolete simply because nothing now is made to last. In high school, a buddy of mine had a Rolls razor. His old man gave it to him as his grandfather had given it to his father. It had the same basic design as any safety razor made today, but that was where the similarity ended. Today's razors are made to be thrown away, which, again, is ironic considering all the bullshit corporations spew about sustainability. But selling lifetime products isn't nearly as profitable as disposable junk. Gillette is a shitty bullshit company. I burned them down in episode 160, Larry slashes Gillette. You can find that in the January 2019 tab at thatlarryshow.com. Harry's Razors is also a shitty, phony, woke outfit. I don't buy their crap, and I would urge you to avoid them as well. So this Rolls razor, when originally sold, probably said something about a lifetime guarantee, but as my buddy proved, it was at least a three-lifetime guarantee. Odds are he's given it to his son, which makes it a four-generation product. That is sustainability. By the way, the razor company had nothing to do with Rolls-Royce. They just picked the name for the halo effect. It was a really cool design. It came in a shiny steel box that was about the shape of a sardine can, but a little bigger. The razor snapped onto side rails, and in the bottom of the box was a sharpening stone. As you pulled the razor back and forth, it would flip from side to side and hone a crazy keen edge on the blade. On the lid of the can was a leather strop. Those things used to hang off of barber chairs. I still do not understand how a strip of leather can make a steel razor any sharper, but I guess they do. Is there any product made today that comes with a lifetime guarantee? Probably not. Everything is disposable, temporary, planned obsolescence. Computers, cell phones, clothing. How many shoes can now be resold? Damn few. Synthetic soles are fused to the uppers, and when they're done, the entire shoe is done. The trend continues to metastasize. Shein is a Chi-Com outfit that has taken disposable threads to a new level. They have no bricks and mortar stores, everything is online, and it appears it's all crap. Industry insiders say they add 1,000 or more new garments to their product line every day. With a ramp-up of 3 days from design to finished product, they're ready to ship. What's hysterical is their attempt to virtue signal on their homepage. Their infographic proudly trumpets 58% female employees. So, be an empowered woman and work in a sweatshop in Guangzhou for pennies an hour. And that sounds discriminatory towards men, doesn't it? Reviews say most of the garments aren't wash and wear. They fall apart while you wear them. So sustainable. When I was a suit in Manhattan, I splurged on a high-end briefcase. It wasn't a steel-framed hard case. It was what they called a portfolio. It was made by Coach, which back then had an unconditional lifetime warranty. It cost a lot of money, but it was worth it. I carried that thing for years, a lot of years, through summer heat and winter sleet. One day, it just tore open. Not at a seam, but the leather panel itself just ripped. So I sent it back to Coach. In a couple of weeks, they sent me a perfect replacement. Was it brand new, or did they repair the one I sent? I don't know. But holy shit, talk about standing behind a product. When I received the portfolio, there was a handwritten hang tag on it from the leather worker who repaired it. Impressive as hell. L.L. Bean had the same policy. Their stuff came with a lifetime warranty, which ended in 2018. And you can't really blame them. Grifters were demanding refunds on things that had been bought at tag sales, burned in fires, sunken with boats. People taking advantage of the goodwill of a great company. But that's where we are now. Honor is passé. But still, it's kind of sad that so many things are designed and manufactured to fail. My first house was carpeted, except for the kitchen and bathrooms. And if you have carpeting, a good vacuum is kind of essential. And I'm a bit of a vacuum freak. You can buy some plastic shit, Dirt Devils and Dysons. They have decent suction and kind of sort of get the job done, but most are sustainably bagless. Who wants to open the hatch and stand in a cloud of God knows what filth as you empty a bagless vacuum into the trash? So I bought myself the Cadillac, maybe the Rolls-Royce of vacuums, an Electrolux. Same brand as mentioned at the top of the show in that commercial. Part of their early promotion showed one of their vacuums picking up a bowling ball. That may have been gimmick, but it left an impression on me. Back then, a new one was around $2,000. Then, that was a lot of jing for a vacuum. Knowing that electrical motors could run almost indefinitely, I opted for a slightly used one off of eBay, a thrifty $300, including shipping. That vacuum was almost indestructible, but it's the attachments that wear out, the hoses and wands and the famed Beats as it sweeps power nozzle. I used the shit out of that thing for a long time. Finally, although the canister and motor were functioning at 100%, the cost of replacing all the other stuff was nuts, so I bought a new something. Can't remember what. A Hoover, Sears Kenmore, whatever it was. It was like a movie joke. The moment you turned it on, a plastic hunk of it blew off the ass end, rendering it useless. It was funny to watch. I should have made a video. Would have been a YouTube smash. So I returned that crap and found another slightly used Electrolux from some guy in Texas. The exact same model as the one I'd bought 20 years earlier. When I slid open the box, it looked like it came from the factory. Virtually no sign of wear. Then I noticed a sticker on the back from a vacuum store in Dallas. On the sticker is the date of service, August 12th, 1997, and the service technician, Katie. Who knows what service was performed on it, but Katie was not afraid to sign her work, same as James Smythe signed his brake front. The vacuum sucks like a fiend. I keep Moose in another room for fear he might disappear up that hose. He's certainly lighter and more easily compacted than a bowling ball. It's in the hall closet, just a few yards from the antique brake front. It's a big world, but a small one too. What if this new, slightly used Electrolux was once in the same household as the brake front from Indianapolis? Did it suck up flakes off the carpet from breakfast croissants? Spilled M&Ms from a Halloween candy dish? Maybe they know each other, spent a few years together in St. Louis on their way west. And if they both outlive me, which is very possible, will they be separated or remain together for the next big leg of their journey? There's no possibility of such cosmic coincidence with shit from IKEA or plastic vacuum cleaners, none whatsoever. And if placed in the hands of some clairvoyant for a psychometric reading, what else could they say but this stuff is worthless crap? Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Special thanks to you wonderful folks who helped me keep this show going with your support. If you'd like to join that majestic gang, go to thatlarryshow.com, where you will find not only hundreds more episodes, you'll also find a Patreon and PayPal button that enable donations in a couple of clicks. There's also a P.O. Box address if you prefer the anonymity of U.S. mail. I will post pictures of that prefab Sears mansion and a link to the Electrolux commercial, a shot of the Rolls Razor, my new, nearly unused Electrolux, and that ancient brake front. You can follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, No Agenda Social. We have a lot of fun there between episodes, so come hang out with us at the Take No Shit Dojo, from whence this show emanates. If you want to write to me, the address is thatlarryshow@gmail.com. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.